Those crazy Jets, what do we make of them after an unusual GM firing? The impact of Patrick Peterson's suspension, and Andy gets to discuss his favorite receiver's arrival in New England. We're breaking it down on the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. Hello and welcome to the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. I am Gary Gramling, and I'm here with a road-weary Andy Benoit, literally icing up as we take this show.
Well, you didn't need to share that part. I'm going to be done icing my bicep tendon that I'm icing, Gary, as you can see, as our listeners could nap, though, so I don't know why you let off with revealing that, but you're right. I've been in Atlanta, and I've been in Nashville, which are only about 4 hours apart. I didn't realize that when I left. So I left for Atlanta, and just by coincidence, the Titans contacted me on that trip and said, hey, can you come in Monday? I did something with Kevin Byard, among other things. And so I extended the trip. You're right. I am a little bit road weary. I packed for a week, though I had plenty of clothes.
We can hear the pain in your voice. That's why I wanted to point out that you are, and I mean this, Andy is literally icing his bicep as we tape this show. It's tough on the road.
Well, that stemmed. Yeah, it is. I'm trying to think how I even tweaked my, it's not a big deal. It's not a big deal at all.
All right.
If I were on an injury report, it'd absolutely be probable if I'm even on the report to begin with.
We'll put you on the report just so we don't get fined. But we have some news to catch up on, and we're going to start off with the New York Jets. And look, this is this was kind of, it was a good offseason happening. It sort of filled the news cycle, I feel like. I'll say this, the doom and gloom stuff got a little bit out of hand with this one, but
absolutely. The Jets are getting treated like they're the marquee franchise of the NFL, and Adam Gase is the most famous coach in the history of mankind.
Yeah, we'll get into it because I do think the unwashed masses upon whom we look down on have some legitimate points about this, but everyone's kind of freaking out here. I thought Mike Maccagnan was a dead man walking as soon as they hired a new head coach, and I mean, I don't know, these arranged marriages just don't really work out.
I agree with you. Maccagnan's name was floated on the hot seat a few months ago. And what's bizarre, the order of things is what makes it bizarre, isn't it, Gary?
Yes.
Because Maccagnan, it sounds like, along with Brian Heimerdinger, who was their number two guy there, Mike Heimerdinger's son, if you people remember Mike Heimerdinger, the Titans offensive coordinator years ago, the late Mike Heimerdinger, very good offensive coordinator. But those two guys, it sounded like, were leading the coaching search. So they picked the very man who wedged them out.
Yeah. Yeah, that seems like how it played out. And obviously it was strange to have Maccagnan in, because this, from what we've heard reporting-wise, Albert Breer obviously did a lot of good work on this one, but he basically said this was not a Doug Whaley in Buffalo situation with Sean McDermott, where Whaley was technically still the general manager when the draft came around, but really was not running the war room. Maccagnan, the understanding is Maccagnan was running the draft this year, and obviously he had plenty of say in free agency as well. So, I mean, he was sort of a full-fledged general manager until now.
And Manish Mehta of the New York Daily News had a story up recently that Adam Gase even sat off to the side in the war room and distanced himself from the draft process because he felt like he'd been distanced and that his input was not sought or welcomed. And the main underlining theme of Mehta's story is that Maccagnan has a philosophical belief and separating your head coach from your scouting department, because he does not want the head coach's opinion of players to influence the scouting process. If that's the case, Gary, then if firing Maccagnan's a mistake, you know, the mistake wasn't made a few days ago. It was made a few months ago when they did it, when they didn't fire him before he actually had to do all of his job, before he spent hundreds of millions of dollars and the number three overall pick. But if that's the case, that Maccagnan did not deliberately did not want his head coach's input on the scouting process, it's, and I do not know Mike Maccagnan, but it's hard to understand how anyone could get a GM job with that kind of philosophy.
Yeah, that is strange. And I'll make this point, because Albert Breer kind of hinted toward this in some of his reporting, but there was maybe a little bit of cowardice when it came to approaching this draft from the remaining guys. It seemed like everyone sort of wanted to hedge their bets and distance themselves from really tying themselves to this draft class here. And look, we talked about it plenty. 2019 was not a good draft. There were plenty of reports that the Jets wanted to trade down. They did not. They sat at three. They took, it was going to be if Nick Bosa was on the board, they take Bosa. If Quinnen Williams was on the board, they were going to take Quinnen Williams. They were linked to Ed Oliver a little bit, but you couldn't really screw up the number three pick if you just stay there. And then they didn't have a second round pick, so it was sort of a low impact draft for the Jets as far as decisions to be made. And it seems like no one really wanted to take the risk of putting themselves. Putting their names on some of these decisions.
Which means that obviously the front office and coaching staff were not in lockstep together, and that's almost always a problem in the NFL mm-hmm. because it's not like basketball or baseball where the positions do relatively the same thing from scheme to scheme. In the NBA, it's a fluid game, and to some degree, everybody's small forward and shooting guard do the same thing as everybody else's small forward and shooting guard. Baseball, it's often like that when you factor in hitting. I mean, that's just baseball's nature. So football's not that way, though. There are different schemes that ask different things of different players at the same positions, which is why it's absolutely ludicrous if a front office would not just fail to seek out the head coach's idea on what types of players they want. And from what I heard, Gase wasn't saying, I want this guy. He's saying, here's the type of the prototype that we look mm-hmm. for. And Gase absolutely has very specific prototypes. For the front office to not heed that advice is one thing. To outright distance themselves or ignore that advice deliberately, that's flat out wrong, Gary. That's the wrong way to scout talent.
If that is true, and we can't say for sure that is true, but that's a silly way to go about running your organization. I do want to make just one more point, and look, I'll say this with the caveat that I rarely spend tens of millions of dollars over the course of a summer, but the signings the Jets made this summer, the three big ones being Le'Veon Bell, Jameson Crowder, and C.J. Mosley. That's not really, I know it's a lot of money. The sticker prices look big. They have nowhere else to really put that money right now. Their drafts were so bad in 2015, 2016. Right. There was no depth in that 2017 draft. Jamal Adams is obviously a great player. Basically, Crowder and Bell are on what amount to two-year deals, and Mosley's on what amounts to a three-year deal. Now, they have to sign Leonard Williams, and they do have space to sign Leonard Williams to a long-term deal. That 2016 draft class, they have literally no one to sign. Darren Lee is traded now. He wasn't very good while he was there. There's no one else for them to sign. And then Adams comes up in 2 years. So like I said, when it is time for them to pay Jamal Adams, they could very well be done with Le'Veon Bell and Jameson Crowder at that point.
That's the benefit, I guess, of having unsuccessful drafts, is you get a lot of cap space later because you don't have the Cowboys, for example, are in a tough cap situation. Mm-hmm. I'm sure there will be people that kind of tacitly or take side swipes criticizing them for that. Oh, you don't have the cap space. But the reason they're in that situation is because they've drafted so many good players that they're going to have to make tough decisions about who to re-sign. Their players became so valuable. The Jets have the opposite of that, which doesn't speak well for the GM either. But that when it gets like that, that's not always just a case of picking good players and bad players. There's a whole culture that goes into draft picks not panning out. And the GM who's picking them is only part of that culture. He's not everything. So I wouldn't put that all on Mike Maccagnan, but you're right. They've got the money to spend. The Jets have felt that way. I know when they went after Kirk Cousins, I said that didn't make any sense because why would you think about drafting someone and then also pursue Kirk Cousins, who's going to cost four times more than what the guy you're drafting costs? And they said their attitude, I think, was, well, we basically have a lot of cap money, so the money's not as – it's all relative, and the money's not as valuable to us as other teams because we have so much of the money. So I understand the free agent signings.
Yeah, I mean, it's fine. That's the short lesson there. If you don't draft well or your draft picks don't pan out, you spend in free agency. That's just the way the league works. Again, Gase did not come out and say any of this, so this is all people in the building leaking this stuff, and who knows whose allegiances are with whom. But yeah, you know, the report was that Gase liked Le'Veon Bell fine, but didn't agree with the signing because it's too much money. We'll see. Again, it's funny money for them. Yes, it's money, but it doesn't affect their ability to acquire other players. That's the spot they're in right now.
Bell's going to change the face of Gase's offense, by the way. So he might have he's never had a Le'Veon Bell before, flexible piece like that. So he might have a different opinion once he's schemed with Le'Veon.
Now, look.
He might not as well. He has very specific ideas of what he wants at each position.
And look, the Wednesday show with Albert and Jenny Vrentis and Connor Orr. Jenny obviously did the piece with Le'Veon Bell a couple of weeks ago. She knows Gase fairly well, so she probably has a better read on that than most people. But I don't know. I would find it hard to believe that Adam Gase doesn't want Le'Veon Bell. That's fine if you think your team overpaid for him, but. He's going to find uses for Le'Veon Bell. I think those two will probably get along fine. And then, of course, the general manager search, which sounds like it's going to be something of a farce. Our Jonathan Jones had written about this. They seem to already have their guy lined up in Joe Douglas, the Eagles VP of player personnel. So it seems like just a matter of time at this point until he's in there. And look, it sounds like Douglas is more aligned with Adam Gase. And, you know, this... It's tough to say they've upgraded at general manager, but it feels like this is going to be a little bit of a healthier situation here.
Well, I think your GM has to see the game the same way your head coach sees the game, or at least he has to have a full appreciation for that. And if you don't, then it's not going to work out. So if Douglas has a more congruent view of football in terms of how Adam Gase views it, that's fine. It'd be interesting to know who would have the final say on personnel decision, who has the ultimate power there, who can fire who. I don't know if we'd ever find that out. We don't always know that. It's like John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan in San Francisco. I don't know if I know which guy actually has the final call on everything. I've heard it's John Lynch has control of the 90-man roster and Shanahan has the 53-man. So Lynch finds the players. Shanahan sorts out who gets to stay and who has to go. That seems like a good way to do things. I don't know how they do it in Atlanta either, Dan Quinn and Thomas Dimitroff. But some of the really iconic pairings of coach and GM, you don't always know who's actually in charge there. I'd be interested to know if it's Gase or if it's Douglas, if that is indeed the match.
Yeah, I guess the last point I want to make, Andy, is you look at the Jets and all the takes the past couple days have been, the Jets, they're flushed down the toilet with the poop and the pee, and like this is it for the Jets. They're just in terrible shape. What a disaster! What an embarrassment! They have Sam Darnold. They have a pretty good roster around him now. It might take a year or two for this to meld properly, but. This is a pretty promising roster, and look, I think Adam Gase is a really good coach. Everyone's looking at Miami right now saying, oh, Miami's just got a tank. They're so bad, they just got a tank. Well, Adam Gase just won 7 games with that team last year. He went to the playoffs with a Tannehill-Matt Moore combo at quarterback. If I'm a Jets fan, I feel pretty good looking at this roster, and again, I personally really like the coach. Maybe he doesn't work out, but I like the situation they're in right now.
And why I was laughing back there, because I can see our producer Brandon Nix and the reaction, the facial expression he wore when you added not just down the toilet, but told us what all was in the toilet as well, for in case it wasn't clear. And then the way he furrowed his brow and he's nodding his head now as you just kept on going. So I'm laughing more at Brandon than at your not even sophomoric, but that's like childish humor. I'm with you on Gase, though. I'm with you on the Jets are not a laughing stock. They're getting treated like that because everybody wants somebody to be a laughing stock. It's possible that some of these teams are know what they're doing and just aren't doing a great job at it, or they're trying to find their way. The Jets are not an outright embarrassment, though.
I do the toilet humor for you and for Brandon, not even for the listenership. I know it's right up your guys' alley. So don't pretend you're better than it.
I won't pretend I'm better than it, but. It sounded haphazard, like you started out with toilet and felt like, no, that's not enough.
Yeah,
not everyone's going to follow what I'm saying if I just
you
say
got
toilet.
That was a direct Mike Francesa quote right there that I was delivering. It's not. He didn't actually say that. I think that's a wrap on the Jets one. We got some Patrick Peterson to talk. We've got some Andy favorites to run down in the lightning round here. But first, a quick message here. And listen, Christopher Johnson, Adam Gase, I want you guys to listen very closely to this message before you settle on a general manager, because the truth is, hiring is challenging, but there's one place you can go where hiring is simple, fast, and smart, a place where growing businesses connect to qualified candidates. That place is ZipRecruiter.com/MMQB. ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards, but they don't stop there. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and invites them to apply to your job. As applications come in, ZipRecruiter analyzes each one and spotlights the top candidates so you never miss a great match. ZipRecruiter is so effective that 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within the first day. And right now, our listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/MMQB. That's ZipRecruiter.com/MMQB. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Okay, Andy, let's talk Patrick Peterson here. 6-game suspension. I mean, I don't know where the Cardinals are necessarily going this year. It seems to be quite a transition year for a team with still roster holes and in a really good division. But how do you deal with the loss of Patrick Peterson if you are the Arizona Cardinals?
Yeah, well, first of all, can we agree that this is exactly what it looks like on the surface? This isn't like, oh, you know, I took something I didn't know was in there. I mean, he had a masking agent on top of an illicit drug in his body. So it's exactly what it looks like, and we can talk more about that later. But yeah, he's not there for the first 6 games. I would almost push back a little, gear on the characterization of the Cardinals' characterization. They do have a lot of change going on offense, and maybe that in and of itself will keep them in the basement of the NFC West. Defensively, though, if Peterson had been on the field, if he is and when he is on the field, I think that's a pretty good lineup that they have. They've got a front seven with some firepower, some versatility, Chandler Jones, Terrell Suggs, athletic linebackers, Brooks Reed, position versatile guys, and then cover guys on the back end. And the interesting one to me is they signed Robert Alford from Atlanta for decent money. He got $7.5 million annually from them on a 3-year deal. You're not signing that kind of guy unless you believe he's a quality starter, or given that they drafted Byron Murphy at 33rd overall, you wonder if maybe they also knew about Peterson's situation months ago, and that's why they went out and got Alford and Murphy, because you don't see teams draft a cornerback very, very high like that and sign a starter when they already have a number one.
Yeah, I mean, look, Alford was let go in Atlanta for a reason. I know we loved his performance 2 years ago when the Falcons went to the Super Bowl. It has obviously not been at that level the last couple of years. He'll be 31 in November. But yeah.
But he was owed $9.5 million in Atlanta, yeah, and they didn't feel he was worth that. It's, and maybe they wouldn't have felt he was worth $7.5 million either. I don't know. But I agree with what you're saying. Robert Alford, I don't know if he probably peaked, but we don't know that for sure. We'll see what he becomes. But he was great down the stretch 2 years ago, and he hasn't been at that level. But I also don't think he's been a liability out there. I thought he was a solid player for Atlanta.
Yeah, no, it felt to me like they had a really nice trio there. And obviously they will at some point have a really nice trio with Peterson, Murphy, if he is what we think he will be based on his collegiate performance, and then Alford as the number three guy there. So it's a nice setup in Arizona. I guess my question to you, Andy, is, and we talked about this, Patrick Peterson did not mistakenly put anything to his body, it would seem. This is a pretty legitimate suspension, but if they get to midseason, let's say they're sitting at, like, you know, whatever, they're 1-5 when Peterson comes back, which is probably a worst-case scenario, but let's be pessimistic here for a moment. If they put Peterson on the trade block, what do you, I mean, does this change how you view Patrick Peterson, that he has been suspended for PEDs at his age, an age where you'd expect guys to be on the verge of slowing down?
Maybe, and I don't mean to be literal, but 0-6 would technically be the worst situation that they could be in after six. But I hear what you're saying. That's a good question, Gary, because I think there would be some teams that would say, well, yeah, and I don't think they'd say, well, he got caught cheating. We don't like that. They'd say, yeah, he got caught, and now we don't know if he'll be the same player he was before, given how long he's been in the league. That's what you're asking, right?
Yeah, I mean, he's 29 this summer, so...
And he hasn't shown signs of decline yet, correct, either, by the way.
Correct. Yeah, I mean, I think I would have confidently said this time last week, you can get 3-4 really good years out of Patrick Peterson, similar to the level he's played at the last couple of years. I don't know how I feel about that now.
I would feel less confident about that statement now. I would, yeah, because we don't know how much that's been, how much the performance enhancers have been helping him and what that has meant, how long he's been doing it. You know, maybe he was, I mean, I don't want to speculate, I guess. I hear exactly what you're saying, and that's valid, and it probably does hurt his trade value. And in the very least, teams, if they don't feel that way, are going to pretend they feel that way when they're on the phone with GM Steve Keim for Arizona, mm-hmm, talking about a trade with Peterson. So his trade value was absolutely damaged here. Now, if he comes back and plays at a high level in the last 10 weeks, the whole thing probably gets erased and forgotten. But Arizona, I don't know if they even want to have him around much longer, because they might be in a transition phase with him. Yeah, yeah. It's a hard one. I also know this. The problem with him being out right now is they've got corners that are probably, their whole defense is probably better equipped to play zone-based concepts than man-to-man. Mm-hmm. And if Peterson's in there, it changes everything. There's a domino effect, and you can play either way. So we hear all the time, you love to tell us how the Patriots don't even care about the first few weeks of the season, Gary. They never try. They just use those weeks to build the team they want to become. Well, the Cardinals are going to lose that opportunity now, because Peterson in the lineup and out of the lineup, that's two different defenses. So it's hard to build into something when he gets back.
Yeah, this has been a rocky couple of weeks for the Arizona Cardinals, but we'll see when they get on the field. Pass interference. Madness with the rules.
Have we talked about pass interference since they addressed it? Everybody, it was so trendy to talk about. Did we ever even get into it?
I don't know if we did talk about it after the, obviously after the Saints-Rams non-call. And I think we did like a show or two where we touched on it. And then kind of we moved on with our lives. We're both busy people and have more important things to discuss. But it's back. According to Florio, pass interference calls and non-calls, the rumor is the competition committee is considering tweaking it so that they will not be part of the automatic review, which is, you know, after a touchdown, after a turnover, or in the final 2 minutes of the half or the game, they would automatically review that like they do with all other calls. But they're saying they might not do that is what they're considering. So you would have coaches' challenges only, which means in that Saints-Rams game, if Sean Payton did not have a challenge flag left to throw at that point, that call would stand as it happened. Now, that is a very specific anecdotal piece of evidence there, but I don't know. The way things go for Sean Payton, you kind of could picture that playing out next year in January to the Saints.
I'm fine with it. I like that they're not going to have it be automatically reviewed. These last 2 minutes of the half, there's going to be absolutely no game flow left at all. It's exceptionally rare for a coach to lose two challenges in a game. You'd think it would be common. It does not happen as often as you'd think. Coaches generally will have a challenge left. So I'm fine with that whole approach. I really am.
All right. I thought you had more of a take. I continue to think this entire system needs to be blown up. I think it's really dumb. I think it's dumb to put the burden on the coaches to officiate the game.
I think that too, but yeah. I figured we're not going to... Let's start with the trees before we decide what to do with the whole forest.
I'd say burn down the whole forest.
I would too. I agree. I think they ought to. A lot of this stuff is just driven by revenue. They want to have the Microsoft partnership. They want to have commercial breaks. And so there's a challenge system. If they were really just doing this from a pure football standpoint, they'd have their top referee up in the booth. He reviews everything right away, every play on film, and the referees down on the field manage the game. And they whistle in the calls that way, and coaches don't challenge because why should they be responsible for monitoring the referee's job? They're the coaches. I think that's exactly how it should be done. And that would also get the game shorter, which is a big problem in the NFL that they're kind of turning and looking the other way from. So I'm with you 100%, but I didn't think we were going that way.
We always go that way. We always end up going that way. Now we got to talk about the rookie wage scale a little bit as we continue to fix the NFL.
Yeah, it's coming. Hey, I told you, you can't do that for a few weeks. And Dak Prescott for a little while is off limits as well. I'm just sick of those topics.
It's coming back in a couple of weeks. And I don't know if we have to discuss Dak again until he actually signs his contract. He's going to sign
a
contract.
Yeah, but that hasn't stopped us in the last few weeks.
I guess so. Let's lightning round the final items here. We have one transaction, one old transaction, and one sort of, I don't know what to think about this guy, but let's start with Shane Ray to the Ravens. This is, they played the comp pick game. Not that Shane Ray was in line for huge money, but Shane Ray's an interesting guy as a sort of, part-time situational pass rush type.
He has not blossomed into what you would have expected when Denver took him. He was a late first rounder, right? Mid-late, if I recall, coming in. Wasn't he drafted like 20th or so?
Yeah, he was a late first rounder, and he had something. I should have looked this up beforehand, but while you give your take, I will look up specifically why he slipped. He had something come up. He might have failed a combine.
Well, I don't need to speculate. You're Googling. I'll hold down the fort here. He has not lived up to his draft status wherever he was taken. That we can agree on. That doesn't mean, though, he can't contribute and be a successful player. And in a rotational role, I know coming off the bench in Denver, watching him, I never felt like I was seeing a significant downgrade in Denver's pass rush when Shane Ray was on the field. I thought that he was competitive there. They could still do what they want to do. And one thing that Ray was very good at in Denver is inside designer rush concepts. So stunting or twisting, standing up from kind of a joker position. I don't know if he's a pure edge rusher. I think he can do that. But where he's most valuable is on schemed pass rushes. And that's something we've talked about a lot with Baltimore. That's the foundation of their defense. They don't have pure edge rushing pass rushers. They need versatile, multidimensional athletes up front. And I think Ray can answer that bill.
It was a marijuana citation in the weeks leading up to the draft. So, and look, it sounds silly to say that, and that teams should be concerned about that. And everyone always sort of laughs at the NFL when guys tell them because of that. But guys tell them because of that because they do suspend guys for marijuana still in the NFL. So it matters if you are going to test positive for marijuana because they're going to take you off the field.
Well, it matters because if you test positive once, then you're subject to random tests, which is how you would think drug tests would go. But in the NFL, it's really these recreational drugs. It's a public relations move. The players know when the drug tests will be either in the offseason, be clean for that little window of time where you might get tested. And then it's boys will be boys, I guess, is how it's a blinders eye approach for the NFL. So, but if you test positive, you lose that. Now you do get tested anytime. And that's it's a real pain in the ass more than anything. But you do get taken off the field if you get caught a certain number of times.
Yeah. So that's why it's a concern. No one is legitimately scared of marijuana.
No. But what teams are scared of is, now the guy can't smoke marijuana all he wants. And now how do we evaluate him?
Yeah. Kyle Rudolph. I'm pretty surprised Kyle Rudolph was still in Minnesota because
I am too.
I mean, that was, it wasn't even smoke. That was just a huge inferno burning throughout the offseason that Kyle Rudolph was going to be traded any day, but no one traded for him. And now they're talking pay cuts and he doesn't want to take a pay cut. The Vikings drafted Irv Smith Jr. So I don't think he has a long-term future there. It's just kind of, it's kind of strange. And I don't mean to make fun of Kyle Rudolph or anything. I feel like he's a guy who sort of got inflated into, he's sort of in that second tier, like after the Gronks of the NFL. He's a pretty good starter.
I think he's a third tier. I think he's whatever average. Remember, we were talking about our all average team a few weeks ago, which I took a crack at that on my own. That's hard to do.
It is.
That's a very nebulous criteria. Maybe we could circle back to it a few times. I think Kyle Rudolph is the tight end on the all average team, though. He's not a great blocker, even though he's built like he might be. And he does not run well, and he's not particularly flexible or athletic. He's just a body in there at tight end. And I'm surprised. And he's had a nice career. He's been okay for what he's done. He's been a meaningful player, but I'm surprised that he's still around because his cap number is $7.6 million, and there's no dead cap money against him if they were to cut him. His contract expires this year, after this year.
Yeah.
So he said, I'm not taking a pay cut. I'm way too old for that, he said, I'm way too young for that. And I understand what he's saying, but if he doesn't take the pay cut, he's not going to be there. His market value is not and no one's going to offer him close to that kind of money.
And that is also, we talk about how the Jets just have all this cap space they can burn. Vikings are right up against the cap. They probably will have to make a move at some point because they are cap strapped, cash cap strapped.
Short on cash space. The fact that Minnesota's even engaging the conversation this long with Rudolph tells you they want him around, but they're being realistic about what he is. He's not a 7.6 player.
And I should mention, we have been collecting, we've gotten a handful of average teams and nominations for the average team. We'll be getting to those soon, but we do have one more. And look, as much as I love Adam Gase, nobody loves anyone in the NFL more than Andy Benoit loves Dontrell Inman. And you missed it last week when Dontrell Inman signed and Jenny Vrentis was pinch hitting for you. So I want to give the floor to you for the next for the next 45 minutes to tell us about your joy over Dontrell Inman signing and sort of the warmth and peace you felt last Friday when that was announced.
With he joining the Patriots? Well, first of all, if he were on the Buffalo Bills, you'd be the one talking for 45 minutes about this year. And somehow the rookie wage scale would factor into the conversation once again. I will admit, when I heard that Dontrell Inman signed, I did stop what I was doing and almost started to write an article and think, we got to get this up. I'll tell the editors I'm on the Dontrell Inman signing. In the very least, I'm going to tweet something. And then I stopped and realized, well, you know, how much attention will Dontrell Inman signing really bring? So I do love Dontrell Inman. I think he's going to be if he makes the team in New England, I think he'll eventually become their starter by the end of the year. If he doesn't, which, you know, he's going to be, I don't know why he's been out of the league, in and out of the league the way he has, because he's one of the best route runners in the NFL. He works in a variety of systems. I can't believe the Colts didn't try to get him back, given that they spent a bunch of money on Devin Funchess, who I don't think is as good a player overall as Dontrell Inman. So, yeah, I am excited to see him work in New England. And if he, you know, I don't know if he'll make the team, but if he does, what happens every time he gets on a roster, he just does it a little bit better than the guy in front of him, and he winds up getting on the field.
In your absence last week, I went even hotter with that take. I told Jenny Vrentis if he were to play full-time in New England, he'd catch 85 balls.
I think he would, yeah. I think he would do that in Indiana. I mean, it depends a little bit on who's around him and the nature of the scheme. One thing is New England throws the ball so much to their slot and to their running back that there might not be 85 balls available for a role player wide receiver, because he is a role player still. We're not pretending that coverages are going to get built around stopping Dontrell Inman, but I hear what you're saying. I think he'll fit the system well, and they're out of tight ends now. They're not the same at that position, so we probably will see more three receiver sets. So there will be more catches available for wide receivers. I'm trying to see where he'll fit on this depth chart. He's better than Philip Dorsett, but he's not. The problem is how receivers fit together. You have to remember that. So, like obviously Edelman's the guy there in New England still. Inman is better than Philip Dorsett, but he's not as fast as Dorsett, and Dorsett therefore can run different routes that influence the coverage differently, and that changes everything for all the other wide receivers. So what might be problematic for Inman is that he's too similar to the guys around him. He does what Edelman does if Edelman's aligning outside, which is not often, but he does do that. I don't know how they'd view him in terms of what he brings versus N'Keal Harry, their first-round pick. But he's going to have to find a niche on the team. And that's why I'm saying if he makes a team, he'll be great, because he'll find his niche and it will expand. But it's harder to find the niche than it is to grow the niche.
Well, I said 85 catches, and Jenny was skeptical, I think is how I would term that. But we're excited.
Right. I would. I'll go back and or we could have. I thought you were going to cue up some audio there, the way you teed that up. In fact,
no. It just she was skeptical.
All right. I'd like to hear it.
Yeah, you had to see it on her face. We were just a lot of facial expressions last week.
Oh well, and she wears them too. Jenny Vrentis does not hide her thoughts. Her face is like a billboard of her inner thoughts, and mm-hmm. I love that. Demaryius Thomas, I think, will be the odd man out, though. I think Inman will make that team.
All right. I like it. Andy, that's going to do it for this week. Thanks to researchers Reed Foster and Ryan Taylor for making us sound smart. Thank you to producer Brandon Nix for making us sound human and good. Most of all, thank you to you guys for listening to the MMQB Monday Morning NFL Podcast. I'm serious. We're doing the all-average team. Some people are sending in whole teams.
Can you tell me a few of the nominations to see? Because I'm not as excited about it now as I was, because when I took a stab at it, I thought this is, I don't know where you begin and end here.
Okay, hang on. I was going through this. Someone took the time to, I don't want to, yeah, and it has like justifications, statistical justifications, but I don't want to run through it. I'll give you some of these I think are pretty good. Quentin Spain.
No, two up and down.
Two up and down.
Yeah. Which you could argue equals average, but to me, average has to be like there's a stability to average.
Ryan Griffin?
He just got cut, so I don't know if he's eligible. He got cut as we started recording here.
We'll go over, but Jeff sent a whole team.
By the way, remember,
we'll
I thought Ryan Griffin last year was like the greatest tight end in the world. You guys got all over me for that.
I got all over you for that because, I don't know. We'll see. They started on his Hall of Fame bus, but I think they had to stop production on it just for a little while. But I'll go back to wrapping up this show. We will have the all-average team, though. Send them. Tweet them.
I would say Rudolph beats Ryan Griffin at tight end. With like in a landslide for all average. You know what I need someone to say the names to me. Like I need to just go off of that. I can't create this. I'm a spot shooter in this exercise.
Let's do it then. We'll riff off of it when we do these.
All right. Let's do
there's so a real way
why don't
of just
we encourage
finding
them to send in the nominations now. Maybe we just do it next week.
Maybe we will. Maybe
I don't because I think
will.
What will happen is we'll wind up talking about it like we did this week even more.
I was gonna say this 30-second close tag is gonna be like 40 minutes here.
Let's solicit nominations and we'll go off of that. And if they're not nominated, they're not eligible for the team. That way, I don't have to do any thinking other than just what people say in front of me.
Yes, I will read off all of them, and Andy will react. Big reactions.
Right. Well, where do you come
That's
in?
That's what we're doing.
I want to hear your reactions, too.
I might react to some of them. We'll see. I was happy to see Ryan Griffin out there. So after you send in your all-average team or just individual nominations, make sure you are subscribing to the MMQB podcast. You'll get our show. You'll get Albert Breer, Jenny Brentz's Connor Orr. You'll get the Bad Football Movies shows. We had Longest Yard remake this week. So that'll be good. Subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts, including the MMQB.com, SI.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, radio.com/10things, Stitcher, TuneIn, and other podcast providers. We'll see you guys next week.